This is Twit.
First up, with the pace of news these days, I wouldn't fault you for possibly forgetting about that groundbreaking revelation from last year involving Facebook, your data, the election, and a company many may have never heard of prior to the blowup, Cambridge Analytica. But the battle for our data, of course, rages on. In fact, Netflix is debuting a new documentary at the Sundance Film Festival. I believe they showed this last week, called The Great Hack. And it walks viewers through the scandal. And among those featured in the film is our guest, David Carroll, a media professor at the Parsons School of Design in New York, who has been intimately involved in seeking justice through the British court system in the name of protecting privacy for voters and possibly for you. Welcome to the show, David.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is awesome to have you here. We really appreciate you taking the time. So why don't we start with kind of where this all began? Why don't you walk us through how you got involved in a legal battle with Cambridge Analytica in the first place and why?
Sure. So I'm a former tech entrepreneur myself. I had my shot at trying to make it big with data, and I definitely had that moment back in 2013-14 where we connected Facebook to our app and realized we could not only see the user's data, but all of their friends' data. It felt really weird. When the startup went bust, like most do, I felt enabled and empowered to kind of speak the things that I had seen while learning how the sausage was made. I also teach where students go into this industry. So my former students work at companies like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Apple, media companies, ad tech companies. And so it's always been my job to figure out how this industry works. And during the primary season, I was interested in how the campaigns were using advertising technology in new ways. And the Cruise campaign was particularly aggressive in data collection. And that's when Cambridge Analytica first got on my radar. After the election, I was encouraged by a Swiss researcher to do what's called the subject access request, try to request our data, because the hypothesis was it was processed in the United Kingdom where we would have data rights. And so in January of 2017, I did the request. I received some data in March. And published that to Twitter and got some advice that it was probably not legal. And that's when I got myself a solicitor, which I didn't know what a solicitor was before all this. And we started to look at the legal challenges. And there's lots to say about that. But needless to say, our original hypothesis was true. U.S. voter data was processed in the United Kingdom.
And requesting that through the UK, like from what I understood and from what I read, if you heard back that they were unwilling to give you that information, that would tell you one side of the story, that it was isolated in the US. If they offered to give you something, which in essence they gave you what you called a summary, then you knew that there was some data transported over there, and that gave you a lot more strength for this case that you're going through now.
That's exactly right. Ironically, if the campaign had not used a British company and our data had stayed in the United States, we would have no rights to ask for it or address anything about it.
So why you're called what you're doing to get your data a quest? They called it a quest that was epically nerdy. did you have any concerns or any idea that it was going to be this big when you started? Was this something that that you knew was going to have all these ripples?
When I first got the data back in March of 2017, I definitely had a visceral response that it felt big, but I didn't know exactly why or how. And then ever since then, it's been finding evidence that our anxiety around this is justified and our concerns about this are warranted. So the part of the quest has been, you know, trying to achieve what the law allows for, and that's full disclosure. And then to understand the story about this and what it teaches us. So what is the teachable moment of this scandal? How is it going to inform both the industry and policy and democracy moving forward? So I think a lot is now to be learned about, you know, talking to lawmakers as they consider new privacy legislation, and other things about how it affects our perception of our own democracy, which is really nicely depicted in the movie The Great Hack.
Do you think, I imagine your answer is yes, but that the U.S. needs reform in this matter, it's kind of disappointing from the U.S. perspective that you actually had to kind of cross your fingers and hope that it could go in the direction, you know, that the data would be overseas in order to do anything about this. Do you think reform is around the corner? And are you in, emboldened by what you're seeing as far as like this kind of tech reckoning that seems to be pointing us in that direction?
Yeah, I never expected Cambridge Analytica to be a household name around the world. So it started out a very nerdy thing.
Yeah.
But the reaction to it shows the anxiety bubbling beneath the surface. A lot of people don't know why they're upset about Cambridge Analytica, but they are upset. And I'm figuring out exactly why. The California Consumer Privacy Act is a good example of how this has influenced U.S. lawmaking. One of the key things in the California law that comes into effect in the summer of 2020 is that people get rights to ask for the data that companies have on us. This is a sort of cornerstone of the European model and is the key thing that I realized the U.S. needs to grant what's called the right of access. You should be able to ask any company and organization to hand over the personal data they have over you. Currently, that's not a requirement, and it seems to me a fundamental privacy right that Americans need to demand. And we have figured this out after the Cambridge Analytica catastrophe.
So you said that as a professor, you teach a lot of students who go on to work at these big companies, Facebook, Apple, Google, or at least aspire to. Do you get the feeling that that this comes as what you're talking about, these ideas that companies should take better care of our data and also hand it over, that it really belongs to us? Is that something they come into your classes already understanding or not?
What's interesting is I teach a class called Dark Data, where we really cover this stuff. And my students are very international. My university is one of the most diverse in terms of international students. And so we have to look at not just the U.S. model, but the EU model, but also what's happening in India and especially China. And when you take a global view of how sort of there are at least four different models of privacy in the world, and how they are different and how they are contrasting each other, this gives you a sense of sort of how the internet is splintering. And so it's important perspective to see the big picture. And I think what's great is we have these important conversations where I have students from China debating the so-called Sesame social credit system with students from the US and students from all over the world. And I think really the having this international conversation about these issues is really what's important. And it influences their way of seeing things when they go in to work for these companies, which these companies are operating internationally as well.
Your students are lucky to have you. I mean, being so close to all this Cambridge Analytica stuff that's going on, and then to be able to pass that knowledge on to them and answer questions, they're super lucky to have you. Last month, SCL Elections, which formerly Cambridge Analytica, pleaded guilty in the case and faced penalties. Although it should be, it was pretty obvious to me, and I'm sure it was to you too, that the penalties in the grand scheme of things were pretty paltry. What was your take on that?
So that prosecution happened in January, and that was the regulator, the information commissioner, prosecuting them for failing to obey the order to disclose all my data. And the weird thing about it is they publicly, the administrators of the defunct companies said that they were going to plead not guilty. But then surprisingly, at the last minute, they pleaded guilty, to everyone's surprise. And what's weird about that is that they then took on court fees, legal fees, et cetera, and costs. And if their primary motivation is to work for the creditors and the court and the former employees, why did they incur all these extra costs? It doesn't make sense in the case of bankruptcy and insolvency. And one of the things that we're sort of figuring out now is, do we have rights as data creditors, meaning they owe us outstanding data, just like there are companies that are owed outstanding money? So there's really interesting legal precedents being set. And the story's not over. even though a lot of people think it is.
Well, so tell us about the Netflix documentary, The Great Hack, that premiered at Sundance.
I was the first time I had ever seen it. So it blew my mind. I think people are going to really enjoy it. It tells the story in an interesting way. It follows my story and the story of Brittany Kaiser. Brittany Kaiser is sort of one of the lesser known whistleblowers. She worked at Cambridge Analytica really up to the end. And she's a very interesting character. Whistleblowers are very complicated people, of course. The other interesting thing about the film is it uses visual effects and motion graphics and graphics to tell the story and make what's an invisible world visible. And so I think a lot of people are going to go into the movie and have a much clearer understanding of the industry. I think that companies like Facebook and Google are going to be alarmed by how we so clearly explain their business model. Mm-hmm. And they've really appreciated the fact that their business model has been hard to understand. And the filmmakers have done such a good job of explaining it and then showing the risks to society accordingly.
Does it also follow the story of Christopher Wiley? Because that's the whistleblower that most people have heard of.
Yes, Christopher Wiley is featured in the movie, but he did not sit for interviews. And I think we'll figure out why that's the case later on with other movies that come out later. Nudge, nudge.
Part two. Dun, dun, dun. Well, I mean, and that's a really great point, right? Like, this story is not over. March 18th, 2019 is kind of the next step in the evolution of this case. What happens then?
Yeah, so March 18th is the sort of civil trial. It's really me as the plaintiff against the administrators, the defendants. And that's where we're really challenging the attempt to liquidate the companies. And do we have rights as data creditors? Can this company get away with liquidating without answering to its obligations? And so it's really where privacy law bumps up against bankruptcy law. Are we going to allow bad guys to just go out of business when they get caught?
Yeah, absolutely. I think overall, what's super inspiring to me in all of this is that you're kind of proving, you know, the adage that one person can make a difference, right? Like, one person can decide to step up and kind of challenge this this behemoth, seemingly a behemoth. And then, you know, this has been a long journey for you, but you've made it work. And you know, obviously there's a documentary to kind of show the machinations of that behind the scenes. What do you want people to learn from this? Like, from watching what you've done from Cambridge Analytica, maybe more from a broader sense, like how are you able to pull it off where other people feel kind of helpless?
I think the big lesson to learn is data rights are the new civil rights. It's a fundamental human rights issue. And I think the awareness of these things are helping people realize what that really means. And it also shows that when we do have the data rights laws, that it is possible to protect your rights, and there are data cops on the beat looking for data crimes, and there are lawyers out there who want to defend data rights. And so there's a general feeling of helplessness. There's nothing we can do. We're just resigned to being screwed over. But that's not true, especially when countries grant citizens rights to their own data.
Yeah, absolutely. David Carroll, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Do we have a date as far as when the Netflix documentary is available to everyone to watch, or is it just sometime this year?
I think they have a huge pressure to get it out as soon as possible.
I'm sure.
but also they want to end it as definitively as possible. So I empathize with Netflix and the filmmakers because they want to get it out, but they also want to end it in a satisfying way. So yeah. I would say I estimate sometime in the late spring would make sense to me.
Right on. Well, I can't wait to watch it. David Carroll, thank you so much for hopping on. If people want to find you online and kind of follow your work and follow the story through you, how would you suggest they do that?
I'm very active on Twitter, and I often post updates to the case right there for everyone to see.
Awesome. And that's at Prof. Carroll, prof for professor, of course. David, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and best of luck with this case.
Thank you for having me. Great to share the story.